Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Eric Corum, founder of AIM7. Welcome back to The Blueprint, where we distill cutting-edge science, leadership, and life skills into simple tactics optimized for your busy lifestyle and goals. I am fired up about today's episode because I'm joined by Todd Anderson, a former walk-on football player at Michigan State who accomplished every walk-on's dream and not only got to play, but made it to the NFL. But now he's changing lives with his company, Dream Performance Recovery. And today, Todd and I are going to talk about building resilience, and we're going to frame this through his story, full of setbacks, injuries, and just countless obstacles. As a former walk-on, I know the grind, and if you're listening and you hone in today, you're going to walk away with some tools for facing fears, pursuing difficult goals, and you're going to walk away with a better understanding of why strong relationships are the key to building grit. So let's get right to it. Let's lean in and learn from the best. Todd, you and I have something in common in that we were both walk-ons at pretty good schools. And so we know what that grind is like. But I'd really love to understand more about your story because you took it further. I mean, you just weren't a walk-on. You ended up starting and then eventually make it to the National Football League. So I'd love to kind of dig into that. And not only that, but kind of post-football life and then what that was like for you.
Yeah, you know, it's probably the most impactful decision of my entire life walking on at Michigan State when I think about how it changed the way I think of myself and believe in myself and just my life as a whole. And the way I made that decision was literally, I still have the board to this day. I thought I was going to Division III school to play football and baseball. And me and my mom and dad made a pros and cons chart. And it was completely dead even. And the last line on the side of walking out of Michigan State was, will I regret this?
Huh.
And honestly, that's how I make 99% of big decisions in my life is like when I'm 70, when I look back and will there be this moment of regret or what if? And I think that's a pretty good way to look at things, even in a business setting. You know, it's like sometimes you try something and you don't want to be sitting back if it doesn't work out and think, what if we did this or that? So that was how the decision was made. About the second day of camp when I got there, I thought I made the wrong decision. You know, my mom was getting my transcript around to transfer back to the Division III school. And there was a reason why I was a walk-on. But my coach in college always said, like, you can sometimes in life you have to be the storm and sometimes you have to weather the storm. And, you know, I think I weathered the storm a little bit. But then, you know, when you surround yourselves, and it's a mantra for life, when you surround yourself with anyone, you start to adapt to the people around you. And eventually I started to believe that that's something I could do. And, you know, put a lot of extra work off the field and eventually got to a place where I believed in myself after about a year. But that first year was rough.
Playing for D'Antonio, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was so blessed to have him because, you know, I came in the same year as him and he's a true leader of men. You know, he cares about the person. If you walked out on the practice field, you wouldn't know the difference between a star player and a walk-on and just super high integrity family guy. So I didn't realize the gift that it was having him as a head coach at the time, but it really did give me, I mean, it's pretty rare to be able to be around that level of leader early in your life and that becomes the norm. And I didn't recognize that till later, but it was pretty special.
Yeah. Were you there when y'all went to the Rose Bowl?
That was right after me, you know, but we missed the Rose Bowl. We lost on the last play of the game against Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. So we won two Big Ten championships, but we lost on the last play, literally on a roughing the punter call. It was rough. First Big Ten championship game ever I played in, actually.
Really?
So that was cool. Yeah. Yeah.
You were a fullback. Am I correct?
Yes. Yep. So if I say anything silly, that's because I got hit in the head a lot. That's pretty much the reason.
I mean, being a walk-on, I don't think many people understand like the grind. So I was at Texas A&M and it's kind of like the home of the 12th man, right? But like, there's nothing easy about it.
No.
When I walked on, we had in like the group that would have graduated with me had 9 guys get drafted in the first 3 rounds.
Wow.
And it was just like, like you said earlier, like I immediately noticed the difference between myself and everybody else. Some walk-ons don't get it though. They can't see the gap. And I think it's really important that you can level set with yourself, but not cut yourself short of what you're capable of. I see a lot of guys that got like, they really thought that they should be a starting receiver. And you're like, no, there is a difference.
Yeah. No, yeah. That was not me. I was well aware. But I think that, you know, people ask me what's that, the walk-on mentality. And I think most people think of that, the person that's almost coming in. I don't want to say arrogant, but overly confident and being like, I got looked over. I'm good enough to play here. But I actually think a true walk-on is the opposite, where you go in there knowing that you're probably going to be outmatched. And my favorite quote I heard from Alex Hormozi is, fear is a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that's kind of like the walk-on mentality of, like, you're looking at this thing, you know, it looks horrible, it looks really hard, but sometimes once you get into it, you realize that you're just like anybody else. At the end of the day, every athlete's a human, right? They're all people. And so the gap there might not be as big as you initially thought. So it's being nervous and scared, and maybe you don't fully believe, but you just do it anyway.
What year did you get on the field? How many years did it take?
Oh man, it was crazy. So I redshirted my first year. Second year, I was rotating with second string. Like, they were going to give me a chance, like, really playing well. Tore my quad.
Oh.
Literally mid. I mean, I still have like every doctor I've shown it to is like it is mid substance rectus femoris ripped in half.
How?
Like, so I pulled it, just a normal like pull doing sprints in the yeah. summer. A week later, got out of the shower, slipped in like a hurdle stretch position, and it just went boom. So that was 3 days before camp. First day of camp, we have our gasser test, 20 half gassers, which is 20, you know, 100 yard sprints. And being a walk-on, having a chance to earn a scholarship, I didn't tell anybody about it. So I kind of bent, went a little hip flexion and took off a little of the, you know, rectus being the only one that crosses the knee and the hip, took off a little tension, and I was able to run the gassers because I was in really good shape. So I was going 80%. Woke up the next day, I'm not kidding, my leg was black and blue from my hip to my foot. And that was, so that's the first year. Next year.
So you're out.
I'm out the whole year. Next year, second string, going to get a scholarship, playing super well. A week before camp, cut, break a chunk of cartilage off my femur, knee surgery, operation, had Oates procedure. So now I'm going to be 3 years in, and everyone in my hometown who was doubting me the entire time, you know, I'm sitting there like, I swear I'm good enough to do this. I like, they thought I was crazy for going there. And
because you're going through spring and you're getting the reps and you're getting the job.
Yeah. Done. And up until literally, you know, a week before the first game, I'm going to play. And so then, so I didn't step on the field till my fourth year at Michigan State, which is wild because I probably would have played my redshirt freshman year.
So you played year four and five?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was so bad. Like, so my knee surgery didn't go well. And I remember in that spring, I was walking down the hall with Kirk Cousins, and I was like, I think I'm done. I can't even like move laterally. That's just like sharp pains. And I'm like, I'm going to try a couple practices, but it's not looking good. First practice, got hit and my leg was straight, and it just went like boom. Like, it's like aggressive pop. Thought, I'm like, here we go again. You know, woke up the next day completely pain free. And knowing what happened is that chunk of bone that came out initially the year before, it had settled in a weird spot and it broke loose. And the only reason I know that is because last year I trained for a marathon and that chunk of bone got dislodged and I had to have it taken out.
Oh.
And then it all kind of came full circle because I had like a 2 centimeter microfracture procedure done, but they never actually found the chunk, right? And so it was just floating around and happened to land in a spot that didn't really affect anything.
Yeah. Wow. People don't quite understand how there's a razor thin margin between being healthy and not being healthy. And
yeah,
the saying always goes, the best ability is availability.
Yeah.
And
I feel like everyone's a little hurt. Like, you know, like once the season starts, you're hurt somewhere. It's just how bad are you hurt?
So how did you keep going? I mean, that's like, there's no carrot at the end of the stick. Immediate gratification.
Yeah.
It's just rehab and training, Groundhog Day.
Part of it, I think, was just the routine of it. You know, I didn't know much different, but yeah, it was literally my lifelong goal. Like, not, I can't even say goal, because I grew up, my dad went to Michigan State. I grew up going to games, and it was I couldn't even put to words how much of an accomplishment it would have been to play there. Like, I didn't even think it was an opportunity or in the realm of possibilities. So the fact that was that close, I think, that's the only reason that I was able to. If it was something if I cared 2% less, I don't think I could have made it through.
Mm.
And there were times where I thought about just, you know, when you're sitting out at practice, like rehabbing, like, you know, for 3 years, things get a little tough.
For sure. Did your teammates ever doubt you?
No, I don't think so. You know, because it was different things, and they saw I could play. You know, every spring I would be playing decently well. So I don't think so. Maybe I'm sure some people did, but I actually think it's quite the opposite. They were pretty, I think people realized that I had a lot of potential, and the coaches did too. You know, they moved me around and found me a place at fullback, because that was what Coach D said to me. It's like, as a coach, we need to get the best 22 guys starting. You're one of those people. So we need to find a place for you to fit.
So you did get a scholarship eventually?
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
That was the best day. It was an underwhelming presentation, but there were definitely some tears. And Coach D is not the most sentimental person, you know?
So it wasn't like a big thing they do online today. It was just like,
no.
Hey, Todd.
He did, he played April Fool's joke on me one time. That was about the most of he has an interesting sense of humor.
Huh.
Yeah, it was, he actually, me and my roommate were like the meatheads of the team, fullback. It's classic fullback, right? And so on April Fool's Day, they put a red lock on our lockers. And so a red lock means you're suspended. And we're also like, we're walking. So you don't do anything wrong.
You don't do anything wrong.
You can't, I'm like, did we go to a party? Like, why? What are we in trouble? And there was a note that was like, see Coach D'Antonio at 12 p.m. sharp. Then one of the coaches came in the locker room. I'm like, what is this? You know, and he's like, and someone was like, it's April Fool's Day. Someone's probably playing a joke on you. And the coach was like, I've known Coach D'Antonio for a long time. Like, he doesn't joke around and all that stuff. And then I got freaked out.
If you're enjoying today's conversation with Todd, please take 1 minute and leave us a rating on the Apple or Spotify platform. And if you don't know how to do this on Apple, just go to the Blueprint homepage in the Apple Podcast app and scroll down until you see those 5 stars. And if we earned it, hit 5 stars. And on Spotify, next to the settings gear box, there's 3 little buttons and you can click that and leave a rating there.
So we go up and he sits us down and he's like, guys, there's been a lot of allegations about performance enhancing drugs. And a lot of the student body is going to the media saying that you guys are abusing steroids because you're going to IM West, which is our student gym. We would go like in the evenings at the practice sometimes. He's like, and so I have to do something. He's like, so you guys are going to be suspended. We'll get drug tests and then we'll let you know. And he's like, I'll call your parents. I'll tell them what's going on. And at this point, he like gets up and like walks behind us. Now later he told us he's laughing, like he can't keep it together. But then he comes back and my roommate starts like kind of freaking out, like, you know, what do we do? I kind of got a little mad. I was like, you're going to suspend us off allegations? And like, he's like, I'm going to call your parents. Like, yeah, I'm mad. Like, sure. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. In my world, our world just got flipped upside down. It's going to be in the newspaper, all this stuff. We walk out. And my roommate calls his dad and his dad's like, let me talk to the coach. Like, I want to see what's going on. We turn around, come back, and all the coaches are just like cracking up in the office. And a senior set the entire thing up. So,
you know what? Like, first of all, that must have been torture, but a coach isn't going to screw with you like that unless he actually likes you.
For sure. And he's the coach too, that's like super scary. And even like on TV, they're like, he never smiles. So it was so out of left field that I didn't even think about it being a joke.
That's nuts. So you did go to the NFL. What happened there? Did you get drafted or were you a free agent?
No, a free agent. I mean, crazy story. That's a kind of a long story, but fast forward, got drafted, did well, practice squad, ended up actually failing a drug test. The St. Louis Rams.
Okay.
And the reason my career ended, I failed a drug test. We had a month off and I was tired. We were driving to my buddy's lake house in the morning. It was at the Arnold Classic and we got some of this energy sample. Yeah. Not thinking, I'm like, I have a month off, no big deal. You know, I was like, I'm not 100% sure what's in here, but like, you know, we're off for a month, no big deal. Get called halfway up to my buddy's house. They're like, you have a drug test, we'll meet you there. What's crazy is the NFL had my wrong number. It's the first drug test I had. They had my phone number ends in 4504. They had 4505. And that random person happened to know my parents, who then connected them to me. And it was a whole thing. But back then, it was every single thing was treated as a performance enhancer, 4-game suspension. I could have been on testosterone, anything, right? Yeah. And now it would have been 3 warnings. You know, it wasn't like a actual performance enhancer. It was like a low-level stimulant.
Yeah.
It would have been like 3 warnings, no suspensions. But when that came out, you know, I probably would have been signed when we activated a fullback and then back and forth between practice squad. But that kind of ended it. In retrospect, though, I don't think I'd changed anything because I'd met my wife before then. And I was also so banged up, my body, that like I would have been bouncing around team to team 3 or 4 years, just barely hanging on, you know, and kind of all worked out.
How was that transition after football was over?
So I met my wife and she She'd swam in two Olympics, and then she had gotten sick at the Olympic trials in 2012, didn't make the team, high expectations. And in a weird way, I became so focused on helping her be okay. I kind of just put my head down and started training people and getting in that world and helping her, that I almost deferred payment to my transition and well-being, because it seemed like on the scale of in the world that what she was dealing with was harder, and it made me be more selfless, which anyone would do for their partner. But it's almost like, I mean, you're both going through it, whoever needs it more kind of takes priority, right? Mm-hmm. Like you seek strength from your partner, and whoever is able to provide that does. And so I think identity and purpose is very hard, even if you're not an athlete. And I think that the problem with athletes is your baseline of success and excitement and expectation, it's really raised, right? Like you have these amazing experiences, but the downside of that is your baseline of success is raised quite high. And then normal things such as getting your first job or buying your first car or something, like that stuff seems dulled a little bit, you know? So most people in their life, they continue to have success and they, you know, it's this nice linear progression, which I understand that's not true, but in theory, and I think so for athletes, it's more of like a earthquake type Richter scale going on. And I think that was tough because you kind of need your baseline to settle. And in my experience, what I found is, you know, you're going to have these amazing highs in life. The only way for that not to turn into a low is to pour into other people. And Mike Posner told me that. And, it's 100% true. I think you can leverage that energy and success and, you know, in your relationships in life, you can pour into other people and create an amazing environment community. But if you don't, you just sit in that and don't do anything and expect that to replicate, it can turn to a low place. And I did experience some of that, but it was more of a long, slow burn than most people.
So looking back on this, you went through some really difficult things. What do you think the keys are to building resilience?
I think I would say, I always go back to relationships. I think understanding you can't do it yourself and it's okay to be vulnerable with people. I think there's a direct correlation between vulnerability and the depth of your relationships. So having people around you that can pick you up when you fall and that you can be open and honest with, you can be very resilient through a lot of pieces of life. And I think the other thing in hindsight, and I don't know if this is very difficult to in the moment recognize, but you can't skip steps in life. And I think oftentimes hardships are just preparing you or crafting the person that you have to be to accomplish whatever goal that you want in the future. Starting a company, for example, there wasn't that much knowledge I had 10 years later starting the company about the actual thing I was doing. It wasn't really a knowledge thing. It was more of, I needed to go through a lot of stuff to become the person that was able to actually do that. And I think that's a misconception. The most successful people, they're not high achievers or they're not, what's the word I'm looking for? They don't excel because they know more. They excel because of who they are. And I think especially with like younger generations, and I was like this too, it's like people are really smart. They know a lot. You can learn almost anything on the internet very quickly nowadays, but you still can't skip steps to become the person that it takes to achieve a lot of those goals and lead people.
Very wise.
Not fun to hear in the moment though. No. Trust me. Like sometimes those steps feel like there's a nail sticking up through when you're walking on them, you know?
Yeah. You have a DTC company, but people often see the end result, but they don't see the sacrifice, the tears, the self-doubt, the moments of anxiety, the little wins that mean way more than most people would think, like these just micro ups and downs. You know, I've heard being an entrepreneur, it's more like valley to valley instead of peak to peak.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Until you exit, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever you quote made it. But I think the things that you've gone through as a walk on, things happening outside of your control, kind of like market conditions sometimes, develops this callousness to difficult times, not in a negative way, but you've become more resilient. And so I think you've articulated that well. Before you leave today, if you enjoyed this episode, we've got another one coming up with Todd, and we're going to talk about mouth taping and sleep. It's an excellent episode. It's going to kind of cut through all the noise on all the stuff you're seeing on social media. If you don't want to miss that episode, make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button on whichever listening platform you are joining us from. Until next time, stay curious, stay consistent, and keep chasing excellence.